We are reading from a very exciting and interesting portion of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, with a super excellent purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And today's verse is number 45 to 49. Okay, I'm so glad that I read that last night. I'm fully prepared today. You may have to help me along. I'm getting old.
Well, it's not this one, is it?
This is Tina Dina Rahi. Oh, 49 is on the board, okay. And so we're talking about the offense that was committed to Srivas Thakur by Gopal Chapal, who for some reason placed items for the worship of Bhavani, a very ferocious form of Kali, who herself is a ferocious form of Durga, who herself is a ferocious form of Parvati. Gosh, we're getting more and more ferocious as they go along the line. Who would want to worship such a ferocious creature? Well, depends on what she eats and what prasadam you get at the end of her eating. So alcohol, meat, if you have that tendency, then you will worship Bhavani. So some items were placed on the doorstep of Srivas Thakur to make it look as if he'd been worshipping Bhavani. This is what happens in a Brahmin's home. You see the remnants. You can always tell who has been worshipped in this Brahmin's home. If no one's being worshipped in that Brahmin's home, then you may not be a Brahmin. Or if he is a Brahmin, he's a super, super, super excellent Brahmin, and who only worships the holy name of Sri Krishna. In which case, you won't see anything on the doorstep. You'll hear something at the window. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. But if he is such a super excellent Brahmin, he'll also be worshipping someone using the skills mentioned in the set of conversations known as Pancharatra. Pancharatra is a series of conversations between Lord Narayan, who, let me tell you, for those devotees of Krishna, is none other than Krishna. He's Krishna, but in a executive form, Prabhupada tells. He's having a series of conversations with Narad Muni, the four Kumaras, Lord Shiva, Lakshmi, and is detailing different ways that he can be worshipped. So from Lakshmi we get the Lakshmi Tantra, from Shiva we get the Ahira Budnya Samhita, from Narada Muni we get the Narada Pancharatra, like that. So we get handbooks, manuals of worship. And whereas the Upanishads deal with philosophy, just philosophy, no ritual, the Pancharatra deals with ritual. One time a professor from Winchester University came here and she said, Kripa Moya, I want to ask you a question. Why is it when I talk to the devotees about ritual, they say we don't do rituals? He said, but all through the morning program, you've been doing rituals. But the devotees say, we don't do rituals, we just do bhakti. And yet, you know, everybody's moving up one end of the, you know, in the curtains, and we're looking, and we're playing a particular song. And only that song ever gets played in any Krishna temple all over the world. You cannot play any other song. People will go crazy. They go nuts if you play any other song. And it has to be that version of the song, right, with Jamuna singing, right? They'll cut the cord, they'll get rid of the temple president. If anyone should as much as dare put on another recording. Am I right? Is that ritual? You bet it's ritual. And then we all line up and we take Charanamrita. Okay? We take Charanamrita and then we have our hands washed. Is that ritual? You sure bet it's ritual? It's ritual because it's a repetitive activity that we do. And then we all bow down. But that wasn't enough for us. We had to make another ritual. And that ritual was bringing Prabhupada from the altar here, putting him at the altar down here, and then following him all the way back up to the altar. And then at the end of the kirtan, when someone says, Jaya, Jaya, Prabhupada, instead of looking over here where Prabhupada now is, according to the new ritual, we look back over here because we're still addicted to the old ritual. Can someone please tell me what's going on? Be careful when you change rituals, especially in a ritualistic movement like ISKCON. Okay? And then we have certain rituals. On Saturday, there has to be certain food. Am I right? Has to be certain. That's also become a ritual. So we are creatures of habit and creatures of ritual. And, you know, it's a very good place for people with obsessive compulsive disorder. They can hide away in ISKCON. They can do lots of hand washing and lots of... And everybody will think, oh, he's a really good Brahmin. He's got OCD, but he's washing his hands 26 times before he does japa. He's a really, really good Brahmin. So the point here is that we do have ritual. Why do we have ritual? Because the mind requires ritual. Even if you're a Brazilian footballer at the World Cup. You ever seen a Brazilian footballer? They touch the turf, they touch their head. Hey, wait a minute, that's Hinduism. They touch the turf of the stadium, and they touch their head. And then they make the sign of the cross, kiss their fingers, and only then can they play football. It's a ritual. It's a ritual. The mind requires rituals. And so Lord Narayan says, okay, I'll give you rituals, but they're all going to be dedicated to me, you see. Now, you may say, well, we don't do rituals. There is a wave of Protestantism, as I call it, in ISKCON today. Western, European, and American Protestantism that discarded ritual as being subsidiary to the main belief system and the main system of practice. That goes on. So we have devotees, we didn't need all these Hindu Shmindu fire yagyas. We don't need all these Hindu Shmindu ringing of bells. We don't need all this Hindu Shmindu. What is this? And we have devotees who say things like this. Well, hello. Where are you? What religion do you follow? Do you follow ours, or do you want to make up a new one? So we have people getting married without fire yagya. We have babies being born with no ritual at all. As Prabhupada writes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, simply the child is wiped with antiseptic, and that is the only ritual. Prabhupada writes it in Chaitanya Charitamrita as an exhibition of Kali Yuga non-ritual, where Vedic culture has completely died. And now some of our devotees of Krishna think that is actually all that is expected of us. So they have discarded ritual in the name of ritual being a bad thing. You see what's happening? And I have to then gently, and perhaps not so gently, explain to people that if you want to get married and you consider yourself an initiated disciple of such and such a Maharaj, usually a Maharaj, then you have to at least follow the instructions given by the founder Acharya. And then they go, oh, yeah, okay, well, can you make it as short as possible? Because I'm not into all this Hindu Shmindu ritual. And of course, at that point, the phone in my hand melts. My face becomes a little redder. Then I control myself by deep breathing, pranayama. And then I speak very gently. Anyway, I just thought I would sound off. That's my rant finished. So now we go to a person who was actually envious of the... Because this is a very interesting thing that's going on here, because this is a crossover between the revolution that is bhakti in the Kali Yuga and the revolution that was bhakti previously. Here, we've just got through verses where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says the only religion required is the chanting of the holy name. Isn't it? This is Harir Nam Eva Kevalam. It's the only way, the only way, the only way. Now, in the mind of the mode of passion, the mode of passion tries to take one principle and reject all others. You see? And this is the mode of passion. I take this is my religion, I kick out everything else. But then the acharyas have gently reminded us, like Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, no. When you go, when you see or when you go into another person's place of worship, you should see, here my Lord is worshipped, but under a different name. So I'm in a different place. Still, the Spirit is there. And the Ishapanishad counsels us, vidyam cha yas. that we learn both side by side. That part of the Vedas which we do not it's very strange actually. This is that everybody should worship the Vedas because the Vedas tell us how to promote ourselves to a higher level in our next life. So 3/4 of the Vedas, if not 7/8 of the Vedas, is all about fruitive activity and having a happy life here. So the Vedas are given by the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. But by the time we get to the Upanishads, we're finding that a person who is always doing these rituals, fire yagyas, for the satisfaction of the gods, with the intention of having more enjoyment, sensual enjoyment on another planet, and a good birth the next time round, this person is known as Devanam Priya. And in the Nirukti dictionary, Devanam Priya is an epithet of a person who means Devanam Priya means beloved of the gods. So such a person is an epithet, because the Nirukti is a thesaurus. A thesaurus, you get one word which means these other words. So Devanam Priya means beloved of the gods, but it also means fool. If you call someone Devanam Priya, you've called them a fool. The demigods must love you, Prabhu. Okay? The demigods must love you. Okay? Because your intention is to please the demigods. Okay? It's not a very nice thing to say about someone. But Krishna also says it. Because Krishna is gently turning our attention in the Upanishads towards the discrimination between matter and spirit. I had no idea. I saw her and I think, who's that little girl? Interesting, very interesting. How did that happen? You just had children and then, you know. First they weren't there, now they're there. How does that work? So Devanam Priya. So our attention is being turned away from demigod worship. But do not be like the person whose child was going to school. A child was learning A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Okay. And then the mother came back to the school to see what the teacher had been teaching the child, 5 years later. And then the mother saw that the child was learning, what is it called? Algebra. Algebra. I thought that was the name of a Islamic terror organization, Algebra. It's not? Okay. No, that's algorithm. Okay. So anyway, this algebra, involves substituting letters for unknown values. So A plus B equals C squared. So the mother saw this on the paper, and she looked at the teacher and she said, well, this is what he was learning 5 years ago. Why has he not moved on from A, B, C? You see, she thought it was just the same thing. So Prabhupada said that when you see a devotee performing apparently menial services for Krishna, you should not think this person is, 5 years ago when he joined the temple, he was washing the pots. Now he's still washing the pots. Why hasn't my son moved up in ISKCON? Why is my son not a, deputy temple president by now? Why has he not moved on to the upper reaches of the organization? Why is he still washing the pots? But washing the pots is a devotional service to Krishna. So the point is, don't think that this person has not moved on. Or before he became a Vaishnava, he was ringing a bell and waving incense and worshiping Shiva. Now I came to the temple and he's ringing a bell and waving incense. He's still doing the same thing. I don't think he's really moved on at all. So you have to see that the moving on is done within. That's how we move on in Krishna consciousness. If you look at the outside, you'll see, just like Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, and he pointed out an older lady who was bringing a pot of Ganges, Yamuna water on her head. That was when you still could use the Yamuna water for thank you. But you've missed the best part of the class now. Because it all gets very serious from now on. He saw the lady with the pot on her head bringing water. And he said, this lady has been bringing Yamuna water to this temple ever since I was here in 1962. And still she is doing it today. It was in 1972. She's going back to Godhead for this service. So Prabhupada made this pronouncement and devotees were shocked. Well, we thought you had to sell 900,000 books and win the marathon 17 times to go back to Godhead. And the Prabhupada was indicating that, you know, you just do one thing throughout your life. Because he knew this woman had been bringing water for the past 20, 30 years. She'd been bringing water to this one particular temple. So Madhvacharya, he says that whatever is your constant service, is that is your level of bhakti. Whatever you manage to do every day, that's your level of bhakti. We are not the religion that goes really, really up high for, you know, certain periods and then crash. We're not the boom and bust religion. You know, I'll do really well for Ramadan and then the rest of the year I won't do very much. I give up everything for Lent and then the rest of the year I won't do very much. I'm a really good spiritual person at Christmas time, but, you know, come January the 15th, I'm not a very nice person. This is mode of passion religion. The idea is at least to hit the mode of goodness every day for at least some period of the day. And what you do before breakfast is pretty much the measurement of your religious capacity. So we should be honest about our religious capacity. We should not try to be more than we are. And that's where the guru comes in. The guru will always not lie and will always remind you. Of course, Prabhupada says sometimes the guru will flatter you, puff you up when you're down, and then crush you when you're up. This is the way the guru deals. Huh? You're going through a hard patch and the guru says, I've noticed, you know, you're really making great progress as a devotee. And then you're flying high and you think, who are you? Who are you? Who do you think you are? Sit down. Shut up. This is the guru's business. Prabhupada said, the hand in the pot. Hand in the pot. The potter in Vrindavan, he makes a metal pot. So the hand is in the pot, and outside is the hammer. Tap, 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 tap. So he's making correction on the outside. On the inside, he is supporting. Hammer in the pot, hammer outside the pot. This is the guru. Anyway, I come here and I say the same things. So, in each yuga, there is the performance of a different type of essential activity that is the prime necessity for that yuga. Meditation, fa-yagya, treta-yuga, deity worship, and then sankirtan in kali-yuga. But it doesn't mean that all the other angas are abandoned. The very important angas. But they're just relativized according to the procedure for the age. So the most important thing in the age of Kali, the actual process by which we go back to Godhead, is the chanting of the holy names of Krishna. This is stated in the Kalashantarana Upanishad. So we've just got through that bit. But it doesn't mean that a Brahmin says, no longer shall I give attention to waving incense and ringing bells. Well then, how do we see Madhavendra Puri? Madhavendra Puri seems to say, I bid adieu to my morning bath. Farewell. Well, it's because what he's saying is that he's dealing with any extraneous activity. What he was bidding goodbye to was the worship of the ancestors, which is called tarpana. Tarpana is something that, you know, when a second initiated ISKCON person chants Gayatri, it's all over in a flash. If you blink, you could miss it. But for in the other sampradayas, it's quite a long procedure. Each time it could go up to half an hour. And whereas we chant 10 times, they could chant 108 times each Gayatri. And for them, that's their japa. But for us, our japa is the name of Krishna. Do you understand? So we don't throw a lot of water around. Sometimes you barely see devotees do achman before they do Gayatri. Sometimes we see them doing Gayatri walking or you know, interrupting Gayatri to take a telephone call. This is not in the Shastra, by the way. So we don't say, well, Madhavendra Puri rejected ritual. No, he didn't. The ritual was still there. But it was governed by the overriding principle. And of course, Madhavendra Puri had the right to do that because he was already in love of God. If you're already in love of God, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, then you come into the level of Rag Anuga or Ragatmika Bhakti. And therefore, your practice is uncontrollable. In other words, you can't help it. You're an addict. An addict can't help his activity. He's got this driving force. So an addict of the holy name of Krishna just has to chant. And that's why Krishna looks at that and says, not, oh, you didn't ring any bells and wave any incense. You know, that's not so good. But if you're not on that level, then you take advantage of any recourse possible. So we take advantage of ritual. We take advantage of many things. Now, we just recently passed Advaita Acharya's appearance day. He was worshipping a Shalagram Shila. Lord Chaitanya appeared. He did not stop his Shalagram Shila worship because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had appeared and taught the Sankirtan movement. It's not that everybody ditched their morning programs, but they added to them. And indeed, if you go to Shantipur today, you'll still see the Shalagram Shila that Advaita Acharya was worshipping 500 years ago that brought down Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Well, it was his fervent plea, my dear Lord, please incarnate in this age, we need you. But that Shila is still there. Where were we? Where are we going in this class? I don't know. So we don't ditch anything, but according to our ability, generally speaking, we have to expand. We have to add on. And Prabhupada writes many times that particularly householders are attached to form and control and enjoyment, generally. I'm speaking of myself. We're householder. That ashram is where you have to discriminate between one form and another. Otherwise, you can't be a husband, you can't be a wife, you can't be a father, you can't be a mother. You have to discriminate between this form and another form. You have to discriminate between a man and a woman. Otherwise, you can't form that relationship necessary for the ashram itself. So it's God-given, you know, at least the last time I looked, Chaturvarnya Maya Shrishtam. But at the same time, it is meant to be passed through. You're not meant to be a grihastha addict. It's an ashram that we pass through. And transformation occurs. See? You shouldn't, at the end of your grihastha ashram, whenever that is, you shouldn't be the same person as when you went in. So there are certain rules. So you cannot give up the rules of the grihastha ashram if you are there. And one of the rules is that you do deity worship. You take the food that you want to enjoy and you offer it to Krishna first. That is what's done. And therefore we normally find that householders have deity worship in their home. And therefore we find that brahmacharis don't. Right? Brahmacharis live in an ashram or a mutt, and their worship goes on in the temple downstairs. They do everything collegiately. We don't find a lot of, you know, 16 brahmacharis in the ashram, 16 sets of deities. Do we? No, we don't. Everybody ringing bells and waving incense up in the ashram. We don't find that. Why? Because they live in an ashram. They're getting the benefits of living in an ashram by doing collegiate worship. And then when a sadhu such as that, a brahmachari or a sannyasi, is traveling, they'll take with them perhaps a very small rupa or a Shalagram Shila, which they will wear around their neck. That's why Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, when one Vaishnava greets another Vaishnava, he will say, my dear Prabhu, who is that around your neck? Please tell me your service for him. Please tell me what prayers you chant for him. So the Vaishnavas would look at who's around the neck, and they say, well, if you really insist, I will show you my... And then in that way, that would inspire them to talk about Krishna. Because then one Vaishnava would be saying, well, sometimes I can get these berries, sometimes I can get this type of banana, and I got a coconut last week and it was really good. In my begging, I was able to offer some different things. That's why we've just heard in this section that the Brahmachari came in front of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in an excited state. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu scooped up some of the uncooked rice that this devotee had been begging. Have we come to that point yet? It was uncooked rice, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took it in his mouth. He was very pleased to see that he'd been begging. So for every Brahmin, for every Vaishnava, there's paraphernalia. And that can sponsor your conversation. Now, if you're in the mode of goodness, the Brahmin will worship Vishnu. If you're in the mode of passion, you will be worshipping Lord Brahma and other deities in other forms, Lord Shiva. And if you're in the mode of ignorance, you'll be worshipping, you know, some fearful forms, Prabhupada calls them, fearful forms. What is it? Agora Rupa? Fearful forms of the Lord. So in this way, you know, you can always tell. And you always tell. You know, sometimes they send newspaper reporters to find out what was in a person's dustbin, right? What's in his dustbin? What's really? He won't let us into his house, but let's find out what really goes on in the house by going through his bin. So sometimes they steal the contents of the bin. This is a desperate reporter, and they will write a story based on the contents of the bin. The only other people who do that is a detective, right? The detective will go through every little last scrap. So here's what happens, is that Gopal Chappal was envious of the Vaishnavas. This Vaishnav envy comes from only one thing. They're happy, I'm not. They're happy, I'm not. You see? And I want to pull them down and show everybody that they're not as good as they make out to be. And this envy comes out through the mouth in the form of rumors, gossip, and uncontrollable chit-chat about what this Vaishnava is supposed to have done, what this Vaishnava is supposed to have said. So if you find your own tongue sometimes doing that, stop it. So Gopal Chappal, we will see what happened to him as a result of not only being envious of the Vaishnavas, not only speaking about them, but he took paraphernalia by which Bhavani was worshipped. And I'm glad to see Sachi sitting here, because you can translate. Gopal Chappal put a flower which was used for Bhavani, and in here it's not translated, it's just called Oda Rupa. Do you have a degree in medieval Bengali zoology? No. It's just called Oda Rupa. I don't know what it is, but it's mentioned in the text there. It wasn't translated into English. But it's a Bengali flower used for worshipping the mother. Often hibiscus, what we would call red hibiscus. And that's why Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami say that Vaishnavas should not use red hibiscus in worshipping Krishna. For this reason. Don't get mistaken. Or he even says red flowers. Now I must admit that I don't always follow that, because my neighbors don't know what the heck is going on in my house. Where I do my puja is close to the window, and they're always leaving and they're looking. Ding, 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 ding. Something's going on there. He's wearing different clothes. And anyway, we won't ask any questions. Something they do at the temple. I think he does something at the temple down there. So what happens to Gopal Chappal is quite quick, and we should be very, very careful to understand that envy towards the Vaishnava comes in different forms: speaking bad about them, thinking bad about them, not being happy to see them, that's one, injuring them physically, or causing gossip about them. All these things can be sadhu ninda. And sadhu ninda is number one on the top of the charts for Namaparad, you see. And that will keep us low down. So if you're going to speak about a Vaishnava, try and find something good to say. Try and find something good to say. And this example is given here. It's very interesting, isn't it? That we have a long section of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu talking about the wonders of chanting of the holy name of Krishna. How it's the only way to make progress in the age of Kali. How this will be beneficial, that will be beneficial. And then immediately we have the story of Gopal Chapel. As if to say, okay, here's the wonders of the holy name, but here's what happens if you become envious of a person who's chanting the holy name. You see. So to make fun of a Vaishnava is something else. To make fun of the way they're dressed, to make fun of what they do, to make fun of their physical ailment, perhaps, to whatever, it will just... Because you're chanting, there's a tendency that the results of Vaishnava Aparad will be removed. But, you know, it's a little bit like Trishanku. Trishanku was sent up to the heavenly planets, but the people in the heavenly planets didn't want him, so they sent him back down to Earth. So he sort of froze halfway. But he froze halfway upside down, and the saliva from his mouth fell and poisoned different lakes in India. But he was a Trishanku, sort of, you know. He was sent up by pious activity, but he was sent down because he didn't have the qualifications. So he froze halfway. So let us not be, we want to be God's chosen people, not God's frozen people. We want to be not frozen, because it is very easy to cruise as a devotee. You know, these cruise control, they don't have them in England so much. But in America, where I was a few months ago, you have cruise control, because the roads are so long, so long, and you can't break the speed limit. Okay, it's a ritual. So you set the cruise control and you go for another 100 miles on the same road. It's just roads just go, they go on forever. If you want to know what infinity is, and you want to get a taste for infinity, what self-realization might be like, drive on an American road. Okay, it just goes on forever. So you set the cruise control. In spiritual life, we can also set the cruise control. It's by never being good enough to make advancement, or making advancement and then losing our advancement through some sort of Vaishnav ninda, sadhu ninda. It's very easy to do, because we have a missionary organization and we're trying to do stuff. One time I was sitting by the bank of the Ganges and Satsarup Das Goswami came down, and he was Prabhupada's servant, and he said, "Do you want to know what Prabhupada said this morning?" And so we all gathered around. It was one of those rituals where, you know, you go to the Ganges and you cover yourself in mud, and then you sit in the sun and you bake. So all of us, we gathered round. And he said, "Well, Prabhupada," and he was just telling different things that Prabhupada had said that morning. And it was at the time of the real, you know, Vaishnav ninda, sadhu ninda that was going on in the 1977. It was going on. The devotees were being kidnapped for being part of a cult and deprogrammed. And so we had devotees being tortured, actually. Devotees being stolen from temples and, you know, people force-feeding them meat and alcohol to break their attachment to Krishna. So that was going on. But, how did I get onto that? Oh, I've forgotten. Is that Sri Maharaj? Anyway, I forgot what he said. I'll probably remember it tomorrow. So Gopal Chapel here. Sorry, Ram. It gets... you know how it gets. What's your name again? So very, very quickly, very, very quickly, this sadhu ninda takes shape. So he put the items on the doorstep, and he puts red flowers, and he puts different items that only a Brahmin would have been using to worship Bhavani. And very, very quickly, very, very quickly it happened. So then, after 3 days, leprosy attacked Gopal Chapel, and blood oozed from sores all over his body. 3 days, my dear friends. 3 days was all it took. 3 days. And it's not like he injured Srivastava physically, but just someone the stature of Srivast Thakur, and that he meant to cause him widespread public dishonor by relegating him to a Bhavani worshipper. And 3 days was all it took, and he had leprosy. So the reason why this is in the book is not only because it happened, but because it's an example for all of us. Be very, very careful when dealing with Vaishnavas, especially Vaishnavas of superior ability. Oh, I know. That's right. Here comes the story. So Satsarup Maharaj said, he said that Prabhupada had said something like, I'm practically whipping you, sell books, sell books, sell books, build temples, big programs. He said, I'm giving you these programs, another, 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 another. He said, just to engage you. He said, because you cannot sit down still and chant the holy names of Krishna. In other words, what I would really like you to do is just chant the names of Krishna. But you can't do that. So I'm asking you to build big things and do this and do that. Of course, he said that at that time. On other occasions, yes, temples, books, you know, all these things have to be there in order to bring people to Krishna consciousness. But the question a preacher has to ask, people like Sutapa have to ask, is, are we actually bringing people to Krishna consciousness? Or are we bringing them on a bhakta program while they're enthusiastic and then watching them as they drift away? And I think you find that the old joke of the ISKCON revolving door has some validity. People are coming in this end, and they're revolving and they're going out that end. Therefore, as Vishnu is given to maintenance and Lord Brahma is given to creation, let us not only worship Brahma in our propagation of Krishna consciousness. Let us worship Vishnu and maintain people's spiritual life. Now, how do you maintain someone's spiritual life? Well, you bring them into a space where everybody's doing spiritual life. And that's nice. It's called the temple. Everybody's doing spiritual life. But not everybody lives here. And even, you know, we don't go out of our way to buy houses sometimes so that more people can stay with us, do we? We just fill up the beds that we've got, and then we say, well, actually, there's no more room. We're full up. My bed for 6 years, the first 6 years of my devotional life, my bed, I never had a mattress, but it was cardboard boxes, and you could only get the cardboard boxes to sleep on if you had sold the books during the day. So you had to sell the books so that you could sleep comfortably at night. Because if you didn't have a cardboard box to sleep on, you had to sleep on the back of a Ford, the metal of the Ford Transit van. 6 years. And when we came back here, of course, there was no beds at Bhaktivedanta Manor. But my place was outside Prabhupada's room. But outside Prabhupada's room. You know how many people we had, how many brahmacharis we had sleeping outside Prabhupada's room? 60. 60. And they went from what's now Navadvip's office, the broadcast suite. So there was sardines in a tin, all the way from the broadcast office, all the way down, round to what's now Shruti and Prana's office, like this. Okay? And the women's quarters were Shruti Dharma's, what's now Shruti Dharma's room, and all those rooms, the Yamuna room and everything like that. That was the ladies' quarters, so no one could go there. But we were bursting at the seams, because the only way we thought people could become Krishna conscious is if they came and lived with us. So it wasn't a get comfortable monk program. It wasn't Bhaktivedanta Manor is a monastery program. It was Bhaktivedanta Manor is jam-packed full of people who are bursting to know about Krishna. And we'd meet them on the street, and the only thing we had to tell them was, you know, there's no other program. Come and live with us. Come and live with us. Now, I'm not suggesting we go back to those days, and it would never pass senior management, but the principle is, if they want Krishna now, here's the first principle, if they want Krishna now, you have to give it to them now, because it's a very small window. You know, the turtle has gone down for 1,000 lifetimes and has come up to the surface, and there's this plank of wood, and the turtle puts his head through the hole in the plank of wood. The plank of wood has to be there when the turtle comes up for air. So Krishna consciousness is about saving people. You know, it's not like I'm on the Titanic and everybody's fallen off and they're, you know, oh, we've come to save you. Okay, well, I'm coming on a rescue ship. We're coming to save you. Help, help, I fell off the Titanic, I'm drowning. Well, just hang on for another 6 months because we're going to start a new course in 6 months' time. And when we start the new course, then you can come. That may be too late, my friends. Maybe too late. And the second principle is that we have to be prepared to support their Krishna consciousness wherever they are. Because when a person leaves here, we don't actually train them to be Krishna conscious in an empty flat with a TV blaring in the corner and a laptop with all sorts of temptation. We don't teach people how to be devotees when they're no longer in one of the most Krishna conscious places in Western Europe. One of the most Krishna conscious places in Western Europe. Good morning, sir. You have just now entered one of the most Krishna conscious places in Western Europe. You could not have made a better decision to come here today. But one of the delusions is for our preachers is how easy it is for someone to be a devotee of Krishna living at home. Now, if it's not easy, isn't it the business of the preacher to try to make it easy for people? To try to help them to take the temple home with them? So isn't it important to teach them how to be a devotee for the rest of their life while they're here? And let me tell you, when you're a devotee for the rest of your life, I can speak from experience, no one is going to cook the sabji for you. No one is going to cook the sabji for you and the rice and the dal and the maha. There will be no maha to help change your mind. There will be no Mangalati sweets. There will be no big kirtans in the temple. There will be nothing. Maybe you'll get the sound of wind and a tumbleweed blowing down your street. That is the reality that's faced by 95% of the people who have ever lived here. And the rest of the people, 100% of them, have never lived here. They don't know how to be devotees of Krishna. So if this Krishna consciousness revolution is ever going to be a revolution, to be a revolution, you have to change people's hearts, and you have to keep them changed. That's the whole point. You know, no point having a revolution where tomorrow everybody's hearts change. And the most important thing is that they will meet Gopal Chapals in their life. Because 99.9% of people are envious or suspicious of the Vaishnavas. Thank you, Jai Krishna. So nice to see you sitting in the pictures. You're getting ready for rituals, yeah. See, it didn't do him any harm. So 99.9% of people are Gopal Chapals. This is another reason why this story is going. Everybody cannot understand devotion to Krishna. You think they do, and it looks as if they do, as we go down on Piccadilly on Harinam. At least they're getting the holy name. At least they're getting the holy name. But we have to be with them in the car on the way home, listening to what they say. We have to be in people's houses, listening to how they discuss, how they talk about us. One time I did a program, and there was a movie called Gandhi. You remember the Gandhi? Gandhi. Where is Gandhi? So there was a movie called Gandhi. And in Los Angeles, what the devotees had done is they coordinated a special printing of the Bhagavad Gita with the Gandhi movie. And there was posters, and there was newspaper and ads, and there was, well, we didn't have internet in those days, but the Gita was being marketed along with Richard Attenborough's movie of Gandhi as Gandhi's Book of Truth. You know, don't think that you start smart marketing just in, you know, when the internet came in. We were there before you, my friends. Okay. So there were two things. We had a book expert come in, and the book expert said, "Guys, You know, Rameshwar brought him in and said, you know, what do you need? So the book expert came in and said, we need to make sure people read the books after we've sold them. We're doing okay selling them, but we want to make sure people read and respond. He said, okay, well, you've got this problem, this problem, this problem, this problem. Rameshwar said, how are we going to solve it? It was 1978, something like that. So Prabhupada had passed away. Everybody wanted to make sure that the movement was really, really moving. It stayed moving because there was, what are we going to do now? Prabhupada's gone. And so this book expert said, okay, you want to make something that is the founder's words, but doesn't change anything. Doesn't change anything, but it is easier to read. He said that the best formula for this has already been cracked by a magazine called Reader's Digest. And Reader's Digest was a very famous and popular magazine, and no article was more than 3, maximum 4 pages long. So he said, can you produce a book like that? And they produced The Science of Self-Realization, which is still today, our figures many, many years ago, was that it's the most read and best understood book, and the book that people say, I got The Science of Self-Realization. In other words, I actually understood something. Because Prabhupada's job was twofold. One was to create canonical texts upon which his movement would be based. But texts are no good if they're wrapped up unprinted. So he encouraged us to print practically unreadable books like Chaitanya Charitamrita. He had Adi Leela being distributed in American airports. Now, cultural sensitivity, direct connection with the audience. But unless we had done that, the books would never have been printed. Because you can't afford to pay for those books, even for your own followers to read, unless you print them, and you can't print them unless you sell them. So here's the issue, that we were printing canonical texts. But then we printed something that was more easy for people to read. So what I'm saying is that we have to make things a little easier for people, not only to read, but also to do. As soon as you come to the devotees, the first question is, oh, you've got a spiritual name. How did you get a spiritual name? Oh, I'm initiated. What does that mean? Oh, you chant 16. 16 rounds. What? 16 times around the beads? Okay. It's very difficult to have a revolution when you tell people the pretty high standards. These are the highest standards. I mean, you've been training for the Catholic clergy. You know, 16 rounds, that's pretty high even for a monk, even for a proper Catholic monk, isn't it? So we have the highest standard, the highest religious standard of any order in the world. But we have to have, a sort of subsidiary practice that people will find. At the same time, if someone asks, how do I go back to Godhead in one lifetime? We cannot compromise on the message of the founder Acharya. So how do you do that? It's called preaching expertise. Preaching expertise. Prabhupada was not the same Prabhupada for everybody. And it's interesting. I've been reading two biographies at the same time. One is Shamsunda's Chasing the Rhino, and the other is Vishakha's 5 years and 11 months. And it's very interesting that they saw a different Prabhupada. Why? Because they needed to see a different Prabhupada. They needed to engage with a different Prabhupada. Of course, he was the same person. But they needed him because of who they were to say different things to them. And he always did. And so what I'm suggesting is that each of our preachers tailor makes their preaching according to the person that you are dealing with. Not compromising, but at the same time not setting the bar so high that people just give up. So the first principle is they need to be with you. You need to give association, either here at the temple or you need to go to their home. So anyway, I was telling you about the Gandhi movie and the Gandhi book. So we did, my wife and I, before we had children, we did that over here because we were very interested in not only book distribution, but what happens after book distribution when they actually read the book. And so we did that and we followed people up. And we took out quarter page ads in local newspapers, wherever the movie was showing. and then you could write in, you could claim your free copy of Gandhi's Book of Truth, and then we would go to be with people in their homes. And so we went into people's homes, and we saw the circumstances in which people would be reading the book. And sometimes it was people who were already interested. And we'd help them to move up a little bit. And sometimes people stayed with us for a very long time. It's hard to sort of juggle everybody. It's hard to juggle everybody. But a preacher, you know, we have to take on guruship, if you like, where a certain number of named individuals are looked after by one person. It's a principle, but it doesn't stop just because your name is on a list of ISKCON gurus. It's the system for every single person in the mission. Somebody has to own a certain number of people. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu eventually sent Nityananda Prabhu back to Bengal and Bangladesh. Before it was Bangladesh, of course. And Nityananda Prabhu had 64 cowherd boys, 64 gopalas, 64 who looked after a different number of villages each, you see. It really is the only way. It's how to save people from falling back into Maya. It's very easy to get people out of Maya. We have the most wonderful system in the world. Harinam, Rathyatra, Prasadam. We have the wonderful happy faces of devotees. See? Happy face. Your face is happy. See? I would join your movement. See? Brilliant Sutapa. Brilliant preacher. But for every person that Sutapa preaches to, we also have to be able to say, and Sutapa has to be able to say, where are they now? Yeah? Where are they now? Okay? And what are they doing now? And are they moving onwards? And if you don't ask that, if how the cells of your revolutionary movement are doing, you don't have a movement, you have a monastery. And it's all very nice. And we can shake hands with mayors, and you know, politicians can come and give talks, and it's wonderful, build big buildings. But unless you actually look after people and prevent them, once you've preached to them, falling back into Maya, then what do you have? It's not a movement. It's a very nice monastery with ancillary facilities, which is very nice. It's wonderful. But it's not a movement. Movement means it's moving. Moving means you have to count the numbers yesterday, and you count the movement, you count the numbers next week, and the numbers are bigger. And there's one figure that you don't know. You don't know, I don't know, and the ladies don't know. And it's the question that everybody asks us, and that is, altogether, how many people do you have in your movement? Nobody knows. I spoke to one ISKCON guru. I said, how many disciples, Maharaj, how many disciples do you have? He said, that's not the question. He said, how many disciples do I have that are actually following? He said, that's the question everybody should be asking. So this is the point. Hello. Hare Krishna, nice to see you. Nice to see you. So, how many people do we have, and how many people do we still have? And if one figure is bigger than the other figure, then you're doing your job. Because if you don't know, and I don't know, there's a chance that no one will know. And if no one knows, Sutapa, regional supervisor, if you don't know, then we're in trouble. We're in real trouble. Because all we know is the number of opportunities we've given to people by selling books or doing Harinam or doing Prasadam. That's an opportunity for a person to be Krishna conscious. But if you don't know how many people are actually becoming Krishna conscious, then you're no longer a movement, you're a church. And here I rest my case. So Gopal Chapel and his envy of the Vaishnavas was showing us that the most important thing that will stop this movement moving is envy of the Vaishnavas. But because 99% of people are Gopal Chapels, then we have an uphill struggle. How to protect people from the Gopal Chapels of the world? How do we do that? Answers on a postcard, please, to this address. Hare Krishna. Should we finish there? I think so. Any points? Any challenges? Kripamal, you've been saying things like this for 30 years. Yes, my dear friends, I've been saying this for 30 years, but I've been saying them to different people. Because the people here in the Bhaktivedanta Manor are always changing. Always changing. No one stays. Everybody leaves.